Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Can we be there? Oh, just think of the time.
Stoke, you have a comment
so strange,
or a thought
said you never know.
About Emmanuel Sanders. Does it relate to the video that he posted?
Yeah.
Yep.
Of him running routes. Not the one of him on the treadmill, but him running routes. When I watched it,
this is on Friday at Dove Valley. He was out there. And Nikki Javala posted the video. I think most of us saw it. It was he looked like a full go.
And when I saw it, my first takeaway was, okay, I've been there before. Right? Like, you feel great. And you feel like, you know, you're running 100%. But then when you watch the video, I saw a little giddy up there. It wasn't smooth, you know, full go 100%. Now, you might feel like it, but when you watch that video, you can see, and I can. Okay, I can see a little giddy up there. All right, which for me, it's not alarming. It's not anything that it's like, oh, he's got a little bit of a giddy up there. I mean, that should be expected right now. So, but I did see that.
So you saw what that doctor saw.
That's right. That's right. And I didn't say anything, and just like, whatever. I could just tell that there was a little something there when he was running. And like I said, and they talked a little bit about that. I mean, I think I forgot exactly what Emmanuel said, but he's like, I don't see it. I didn't feel it. But
I have the video up here playing right now, in the studio. You know,
it's just not completely Emmanuel Sanders. I mean, does he look good? Yeah, he looks good. He looks good, but he's not, you know, the Emmanuel of before Achilles right now.
And are you talking about the top end speed once he gets out of
the
break?
No, it's just when you see him running. I can't really.
Okay.
It's hard for me to explain exactly what I'm seeing. But it's just getting out of the break. When he's running some of the speed cut out routes, like right there, to me, it's not fully. He's not fully back right now. And obviously, look, he probably shouldn't be. So it's not anything to me that I'm like, oh, overly concerned with, because I like what I've seen from him, showing great progress. But there's still work to be done.
Is this about where you were?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's probably exactly where I was. You know, I was able to do some things at the end of the OTAs and got out on the field, but I still, you know, when I look back 2 months later, I was like, oh, yeah, I thought I was back, felt like I was back. I felt good, but I wasn't back. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
And I went through that with a lot of my injuries, like ACL, my Lisfranc, same thing. Like, you feel like you're back. You feel like you're running great. And then you're like a month after or 2 months after, you're like, oh, man. I'm way far ahead than
right,
where I was.
Right. I thought I was.
But I noticed that in the video, and they talked about it yesterday. But I just wanted to just hit on that because I did see that too, whoever that doctor was.
Yeah.
It
used to be the Chargers doctor, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why is he commenting on it?
You know what? I don't know. But there is another layer that needs to happen here. Even if he was 100%. And even if you didn't see some of the, you know, the hiccups and as minute as they are, you still see it. Even if you didn't see it, there's still another layer of the physicality that the sport demands. Like, these are routes on air. He's going to have to get off a jam. Like, he's going to have to get tackled. Someone's going to tackle him around his ankles.
Right.
Right on that Achilles tendon. I mean, there's still hurdles here.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, when he was talking about, is he going to be in training camp, and he says there's a process there, I'll probably start with individual and then, you know, slowly work my way into it. That's why. But also, you know, when you're talking about that, it has me thinking about who? KD. Right? There's another level than going out there, you know, doing a little pickup game with your guys and thinking that you're ready, to all of a sudden now, there is no thinking. There is catching the ball, and what have you done your whole life? I'm attacking the rack. I'm going to the rim. I'm making a move, and I'm pulling up. I'm not thinking about, you know, what's going on here. And you get into the heat of the moment in the competition, and the next thing you know, it's like, boom, Achilles is gone because I'm just doing what I was doing. And I thought I was ready, but I wasn't ready. And we all thought I was ready, but it just wasn't quite ready. And you don't have time to be thinking about it. You got to go out there and just play.
That last part. I know for me personally, and I know there's a lot of folks out there that have played sports their whole life, dealt with injuries, and maybe you can sympathize with this. I know for me, the thinking was always the last hurdle. I know that I'm fully good when I get through a practice and I didn't even realize that I didn't think about it one time. That's that last hurdle. Was that for you? How bogged down would you get with the mental side of it?
Well, for me, I never had an issue with the mental side, just as long as I didn't feel any pain. You know, if I didn't feel the pain, I didn't think about it. Like, okay, it's fine. It's good. And obviously you have a protocol that you go through and you have to clear all these hurdles. And then, you know, once I cleared the last hurdle, like, if I don't feel anything doing everything, then okay. I'm not thinking about it, but you start feeling a little pain, you start thinking about it.
But I'm saying, like, yes. I totally agree. But
I just, when I took the field, you just can't think about your injury. And if you're having second thoughts about it, then you just can't play. You're just not ready to play.
When you forget that it ever happened.
That's right.
I just got some good news, man. And I didn't realize that this was happening. You ever seen The Shining?
I mean, you talk about it now like every week.
I do not.
You went to the hotel. This is where this was filmed. This
Dude,
is the hotel.
I mentioned it one time.
No. Hit us up. 303-713-1043. We're almost slowed
out. Don't
mention
it up.
All
Don't
the time.
I do not.
Steven. Doesn't he mention this thing about
I
The Shining, that
the
hotel?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, it's a great, great movie.
thank you, Steven. See?
That's an auto ding.
No, I don't have it right here. It's,
apparently, they're making a sequel.
Oh, my God. Zach will be camped out.
And
he'll be camped out.
Stop. But this is just coming out today. This is a sequel to The Shining. The little kid in the movie, Danny Torrance, is now an adult. He's traumatized by the sinister events that occurred at the Overlook Hotel when he was a child. And, so.
Look, I'll be honest with you.
Part two, baby.
I'll be honest with you. I never saw the first one, and I don't plan on seeing the next one, okay?
I don't know if you'd make it through.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'd make it through.
Guess what?
You see them little twins on the tricycles, you'd be like,
Hey, Steven, give them the who cares.
Who cares?
Thank you. That's where I'm at.
I got a question for you.
They care less about The Shining.
For you that I asked Orlando Franklin last week, because it was a question that James Merrillat posed on 1043thefan.com. Does Vic Fangio have a specific window of time to prove that the Broncos can compete this season? We'll dive into it next. Stoke, does Vic Fangio have a window of time to prove that the Broncos can compete this year? You know, last week, James Merrillat put out a piece on 1043thefan.com. And if James is in the building and can hear this, he can stop on in here if he wants. But this stemmed from a conversation that he posted last week to the website that basically said that the Broncos and Vic Fangio have a window of time to prove that they can compete. And that specific window of time is 9 weeks. 9 weeks. Because that's where the bye is at.
What's the ramification here?
Yep, so if they are not competing up until that week 10 bye, so you play 9 games and say you're 3-6.
Drew Lock time,
young receiver time, Isaac Yiadom on steroids time, you know.
Why is he on steroids?
I'm saying just as much as possible, not injecting the performance-enhancing drug into his system.
Oh.
Just saying, like, on steroids. Lots of young guys.
Hey, okay.
Sam Jones, where you at? You know, like.
Right. Time to look at the future.
Yep. And look at those last 6, 7 games of the season. If you don't prove it in that window, that it's basically going to be an extended preseason.
Sure.
Looking forward to that next window of time that you believe that they can legitimately compete.
Right. And I know exactly what James is talking about. I think you have to put yourself in that building. You have to put yourself in the coach's shoes, and that's too early for that to happen. Now, maybe you're ready to I can't even say that. I was going to say maybe you're ready to turn the thing over to Drew Lock at 3-6, but I think they probably still stick with Joe Flacco if you're 3-6. And I think they give him a few more weeks to kind of see what he's all about. They want to make sure that he's not the guy. Unless Drew Lock is flat out brilliant in training camp and everything else, and you're like, okay, we're ready for this guy. Other than that, I think they probably stick with Joe Flacco a little bit longer. And those coaches, they're in such a bubble, right? They're not really thinking about 2020. They're worrying about trying to get the ship righted in 2019. So I think you would have to wait a few more weeks after that before you start seeing, let's take a look at this young guy. And you're talking about week 12, week 13.
Well, you come out of the bye week's week 10 for a second consecutive year this time around. You come out of the bye, you go to Minnesota.
Okay.
And after that, you go to Buffalo. Then you play the Chargers, then you play the Texans in Houston, then you play Kansas City in Kansas City. I mean, it is a it is a stretch of time. Sandy referenced this yesterday, that there is a stretch of time. Once you get out of that quarter pole with the Raiders on the road and the Bears at home at Green Bay and then Jacksonville at home, once you clear that quarter pole of the season, it is a freaking what they used to call that in wrestling, lumberjack match.
Mm.
Lumberjack match. Starts with two guys in the ring, and then you got like 30 guys waiting on the outside. You get thrown on the outside of the ring, you get five guys throw you right back in. There's nowhere to go.
Right.
There's nowhere to run. And once you clear that corner pole, it's at the Chargers, against the Titans, against the Chiefs, at Indianapolis, against those Browns, at Minnesota, at Buffalo, against the Chargers, at Houston, at Kansas City. I mean, it is a lumberjack match.
Murder's Row right there.
Murder's Row.
So I just think it's going to be later. I don't think you'll see that soon, that quick. All of a sudden, you know, let's take a look at our future. For a coach, you know, you're looking at week 12, week 13.
Do the Broncos have to be mathematically eliminated from the playoffs to play Drew Lock?
I don't know. I wouldn't say that, because if Drew Lock has a good training camp, certainly that speeds up the process, and that shortens the leash for Joe Flacco. So I don't think they would have to be mathematically eliminated. I mean, you could be a 2-7 team and not be mathematically eliminated at that time.
It's true.
So I wouldn't go that far, but at the same time, I think, you know, obviously Drew Lock has a lot to do with it. What does he look like? You know, what is he looking like in training camp? How has he grown from the off season to training camp? You know, you hear a lot about Drew Lock and, you know, is he quite ready yet? There's some things that he struggles with, but will that continue in training camp? Will he be able to show improvement, you know, from this time of year to training camp and throughout training camp? And so I think that has a lot to do with how quickly he gets in and how quickly, you know, and how short or long Joe Flacco's leash is.
You know, earlier in the show, we were saying what's possible, what's likely, what's impossible. And
that,
I said,
is that when you said you predicted the Broncos to go to the Super Bowl? Is that that conversation?
If you are just joining us, I never said that. Stokely is a fountain of misinformation.
I'm channeling my best Mike Evans is what I'm doing
right
here.
To the idea of, And I am not piling on Nick Ferguson, because I give him credit for saying, you want to know what? Why can't the Broncos go 12-4? I'm looking at the schedule. I mean, this thing.
I mean, I tried to tell you that.
Again,
this is
that schedule right there. And look, it's an NFL schedule.
There's, right. That's what it is.
It's the league.
And it's your division. You know, when you're playing San Diego, I mean, not the LA Chargers in Kansas City two times a year. I mean, that's four games right there. And those teams are the real deal.
I mean, what?
Not saying that you can't beat them.
Right.
But that's
right,
just,
right.
That's just the start of this thing.
I mean,
thing.
But what if you're in the AFC East? And you got the Jets twice, young quarterback. You got the Bills twice, young quarterback. You got the Dolphins. Yeah. I don't know if they're playing Fitzpatrick or Rosen, but regardless.
You're the New England Patriots.
I mean,
right?
You're 4-2. Anything less than 4-2 would be disappointing.
Right.
4-2 is our ceiling in division this year.
Right.
All right, that time of day. You ready?
You know it.
Stokely stoked up. We're getting hyped next.
What's Brandon Stokely?
Yeah, I'm so stoked.
Stoked up about today.
I don't get it, Zach. After the Blues win the Stanley Cup last night, which, you know, by the way, I thought it was awesome. I was fired up that the Blues won, and I'm getting really tired of these Boston teams. And you know I'm a Sox fan, but in the celebration line when they, you know, they grab the cup and they skate around for like 10 seconds with a cup over the head, I think it was seven players that dropped the F-bomb. Look, I get it. Guys are excited, but you have a camera right in your face, and you know you got young kids watching. There's no need for that, Zach. And, oh, by the way, NBC, what were you doing? How do you not bleep it out? Seriously, get a bleeping clue, NBC. And, Zach, that's what I'm stoked up about.
Brandon Stokely's stoked up.
That's what I'm talking about.
Goodness.
You are a trip. All right, so who's... Okay. The F word was in many living rooms last night across the country.
Multiple times.
We had a lesson set up to seven.
Yeah, I didn't realize everybody was so... I thought that's like normal speech, I guess, with everybody. Like, there's just... That's what we're getting on the RamosLaw.com text line. Like, how dare... Like, shame on us for even bringing that up. Is that the norm nowadays?
No, it's certainly not.
Oh, okay.
But I also don't lay any sort of blame at the feet of the players.
None. You're laying none?
None. You know, when it comes to blame, like I'm going to blame the players in that moment of elation for, you know, if that's how they regularly talk and they're out there and, you know, okay,
there's different talk for different places, Zach. I mean, I don't talk the same way I do on the radio that I did in the locker room.
Lord knows.
So get a clue, players. The camera's right in your face.
Stoke, it's not on the players in that moment to police the language. It's on the network who has the microphone near those players. It wasn't a microphone in their face. It was not a microphone.
If
a microphone was right next to their jaw, they wouldn't be barking F words into the microphone.
So they thought they were not going to be heard anywhere, I guess. They didn't see the camera right in front of their face, the guy skating behind
cameras,
them.
The camera
or
is
moonwalking.
The camera is a visual. It's,
right.
I don't think it's
so
the player's fault.
So they didn't think that they were mic'd. Nobody would hear it.
It is on NBC to
and the
be a strainer between that player's mouth and my ears.
You're right. They should have caught it, and they didn't. But at the same time, it's a bad look for the player. Like, I get it. That's how hockey players talk, right?
How all these guys talk.
It's locker room talk, right?
It's daily life talk.
Right.
Really? I mean, it depends who you are. I know different people talk different ways, but...
Right. And look, I'm not sensitive to the, you know, the F word here or any cuss word. I've heard it all, okay? But certainly, you know, when I'm watching the TV at, I don't know what time it was, 9 o'clock at night with my kids, I don't want to hear it every, you know, 3 seconds there. I want to enjoy the Stanley Cup and watch the celebration and say, how cool was that for the St. Louis Blues? And that's not really the case. And, you know, my 15-year-old has heard it many a times, not from me, of course, his mom, Zach, but not from me. But my 13-year-old, I'm like, come on. I don't know. I don't know why so many people are like mad that I brought that up on Twitter last night and earlier we were talking about it and just people are like, you know, y'all are weak. That's the way people talk and this and I mean just numerous and I'm just kind of blown away by that take.
Because I think there's more. You're putting more of the emphasis on the player's responsibility in that moment. where I think, well, I know for myself, I'm putting 100% of that on NBC.
100%.
100%.
I'm not.
How about this? 99%.
Okay.
99%.
I mean, the player's got to know better. Look, even when I'm excited, and I know that, look, I have the cup over my head. There is a camera on me, okay? And there is, and you know that you are going to be broadcast. They are broadcasting this, and it is mic'd up. So, like, even in that moment, it's not the moment right after the game. Like, right after the game where they all jump on each other and you're, like, yelling things and you're screaming things, you know, we bleeping did it and all this stuff. I get it. No problem with that at all. Okay, none. But when you're just by yourself and you got the cup over your head and you're like, yeah, bleeping, yeah. You know, it's just like, guys, come on. Have a little filter there. Because you are solo by yourself, mm-hmm. and you know mm-hmm. what's going on here. So I can't just put all the blame on NBC here. I got to put some on the players for having a lack of awareness. Like, be a professional a little bit. I understand you just won the Stanley Cup, and I'm not trying to be some old, you know, curmudgeon here that's just like, oh, don't say any bad words. I mean, come on.
Look, and you're sitting here watching it with your kids, so there's a little bit different of a perspective.
Right. I'm not watching it with my buddies at the bar.
Yeah.
And so I think you have to think about that, and especially you're a professional athlete. You're representing the St. Louis Blues, and you're representing yourself and your family. Is that really what you want to portray?
You're really not going to like what I'm about to say.
Oh, don't.
And I'm not. And I am not. And
we
I
need to get ready for the dump.
Nope.
Okay.
I did not mention this. We haven't talked about this since the very first segment of our show. And I didn't mention this when we did talk about it. I have the onus on NBC. When I did hear it, when it actually happened, there was a part of me that really liked it. That, like, I really liked the raw emotion and, like, the almost like the, this is who you are. This is who you are. And you're getting the cup for the first time.
Right.
And the guy goes, F&A.
Right.
And there's a piece of me that likes it.
I'm sitting there with my son and we're laughing about it, okay? So, but at the same time, when it happened seven times,
it did,
you know, to me, that was ridiculous. And then, you know, so my 15-year-old's right there. I'm like chuckling with him, like, oh my gosh, did that guy say it again? Right. But then my 13-year-old's back there and I'm like, okay, well, he's not watching. Yeah. And so it's like, if you have a 7 or 8 year old,
that's even more of an issue. Yeah.
It's just, you know, and say this kid's a big St. Louis Blues fan. He's like, whoa.
And now it's okay.
Yeah. Now he goes to school and dropping the F-bomb.
I got you.
I think it was a little bit over the top. I did the same thing with my 15-year-old. We laughed about it. Like, oh, my gosh, this is pretty. But then after the seventh time, I'm like, oh, goodness. Yeah. It's a little bit overboard here, guys.
and you knew NBC thought it was overboard because they went to commercial and they came back. And Doc Emmerich, I'm sure, was directed to issue an apology to the viewers. And that did happen.
Yeah. I mean, but where were they? Were they sleeping? I mean, what were they doing?
Now that's inexplicable.
Like, whose job was that to,
you know, there's seven guys outside in a truck
and you're listening. You know what these guys do, right? So yeah, I'm putting more of this on NBC. I mean, these guys celebrate. They're going to maybe say some bad language. So hey, let's be on top of it, guys. And when they do, we bleep it out.
Or at least on the fourth or fifth time.
Right. What were they doing?
I don't know. By the way, shout out to that fan who put $400 on the Blues before
big shout out.
You know, to win the Stanley Cup. Now he's got a ticket worth about $100,000. And speaking of odds, don't look now, but you look at the way too early odds for the Stanley Cup next season, you'll find the Avalanche right near the top of every list. There are some outlets that have the Colorado Avalanche as high as the third most likely Cup contender. I'm looking at Action Network right now. They're the fifth most likely Cup contender at just 10-1. So hopefully some fun times ahead. Maybe this time next year we could be talking
about
F-bombs being dropped.
How about that?
By Colorado.
I might drop a few. that would, I mean, obviously it was a great year here and it was fun to follow, but the youth and the, you know, the expectations moving forward. I mean, it's awesome. Same thing with the Nuggets. Same thing with the Rockies. Broncos, got a little couple more years.
Yeah, I had to, by the conversation that we were having earlier, about me saying, look, it's, let me set it up right. Emmanuel Sanders was talking about he and Philip Lindsay rehabbing together. And he's like, look, if we're going to win a Super Bowl, this city needs us to da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I said, you know, these guys are talking Super Bowl. They're not just talking about squeaking in the playoffs. They're thinking big. And you sort of rolled your eyes and you were like, okay, no, it's not realistic. And I said to you, is it probable? No. Likely? Mm-mm. Could it happen? Absolutely. And because you have a coach that has coached at the highest level in a Super Bowl, you have a quarterback that has done it at the highest level in a Super Bowl, and there is things that you can draw from to instill optimism. Do I think the Broncos are going to win the Super Bowl this year? Of course not. But spawned from that conversation, I went and looked up the odds. And the Broncos, here's the good news. They have better Super Bowl odds than the Bucks, the Raiders, the Titans, the Lions, the Bills, the Cardinals, the Giants, the Bengals, the Skins, and the Dolphins.
They have better Super Bowl odds than the Titans?
They do.
Wow. That's surprising.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, the Titans were you know, a playoff team 2 years ago. Last year, they weren't a playoff team, but I just would have the Titans.
This past year, they were 9-7.
Yeah, I mean, I have them a little bit ahead of the Broncos.
You don't want to know what? I don't look at the Tennessee Titans, and they have really nice pieces. Sure, they do, but so do we. So do we. So. Anyway.
Are you going to give us the odds or?
60-1.
Oof. You're talking about that 40-1 earlier.
The Broncos were 40-1 this time last season. And I said that was important because the previous offseason, the Philadelphia Eagles were 40-1 wow. And they went and won the Super Bowl.
But you can't compare us to the Philadelphia Eagles 40-1.
Could you? You can't now?
Right, because we're 60-1.
Well, no, I'm saying just looking. Okay.
And they had a young quarterback that was drafted number 2 overall that just lit the place on fire the first, you know, 12, 13, 14 games before he got hurt.
That was the previous season leading up to the 40-1 odds.
Sure.
All right.
I'm confused.
What do you think is the Super Bowl favorite, by the way?
The Super Bowl favorite.
This is coming from Vegas Insider. Close, they're second. They're actually tied for second with two other teams, the Rams and the Saints. Chiefs, Rams, Saints.
Patriots.
All 10-1. The Patriots are 6-1 odds. This thing's like a freaking time capsule. What year is it? Like, you tell me they're 6-1 odds, legitimately ahead of the rest of the field in 2019? It's just stupid. But here's one of the craziest things. After you get through those top four Super Bowl favorites, the Patriots, Chiefs, Rams, and Saints, you want to know who's next in line? I can't believe it. Hell must have frozen over. The Cleveland Browns.
Wow.
The Cleveland Browns. And after them, it's the Colts. Both of whom are right there on the Broncos schedule, by the way.
And you know, the books are smart, and they realize the hype around Cleveland. So you make sure those odds are pretty good. I mean, you drop them down to where people will throw money on them. Especially this Cleveland fans. They want to be like the Cubs fans, right? When the Cubs won the, you know, World Series and all those people, they just kept their tickets regardless, right? They didn't even send their tickets and they kept them.
Right.
But same thing with Cleveland fans. You know they're going to be dumping money on the Browns to win the Super Bowl for the next 5, 6, 7 years. So if they ever do it, they got that darn ticket.
Right. I just, like, we've seen the day. Like, we've seen the day where the Broncos are not even considered in the mix, and the Browns are right at the top of the heap.
Well, when I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
Ooh. that's the thing. I mean, the Browns have done a good job with their drafts.
They have.
They've done a good job in free agency, and it seems like they found their quarterback in Baker Mayfield.
And Baker, by the way, I'm looking at this from NFL.com. Baker Mayfield, the third most likely MVP candidate. After two other quarterbacks in the Broncos division. Number one and number two. This is from Adam Schein. Patrick Mahomes, most likely.
Right.
Second most likely, Phillip Rivers.
And usually, you know, what you see here when you see a guy like Patrick Mahomes, you know, he wins it and everybody's kind of hype, all the hype around him. Usually it doesn't happen again. Not the next year. But a guy like Baker, that's intriguing. Maybe a guy like Carson Wentz, you know, getting healthy.
Yep.
A guy like Andrew Luck is another guy that I like.
He's fifth on this list, by the way. And it's interesting. How about this? This is according to Adam Schein of NFL.com. Patrick Mahomes, most likely, on the Broncos schedule, of course. Phillip Rivers, second most likely, right in division, on the Broncos schedule, of course. Baker Mayfield, third most likely, on the Broncos schedule. Fourth most likely, Aaron Rodgers, on the Broncos schedule. Fifth most likely, Andrew Luck, on the Broncos schedule. The five MVP candidates that all play the quarterback position make up nearly half of the Broncos' schedule. Crazy.
Yeah.
So you talk about the level that Joe Flacco needs to come close to, not match or surpass, because you could make an argument that some of these rosters don't have other pieces specifically defensively like the Broncos, but Joe's got to come close. He's got to come close.
Yeah. Joe's going to have to obviously do his part, but he's going to have to do a little bit more than that, especially in the fourth quarter. And you saw him get hot in the playoffs for the Ravens, and you know he took care of the football, and he just made some big-time plays, and that's what he's going to have to do here for the Broncos. Because with this defense, I think they're going to be in a lot of close games. Can they close these games out, or can they get that team in field goal range late in games? And I think Joe has that makeup to be able to do that thing and not feel the pressure. And, you know, we saw Keenum miss some throws that he could have made. But Keenum wasn't, like, ever really in those situations, not like Joe. Now, the year before, yeah, Keenum, you know, he played great. But Joe has been there, done that multiple times over every single year. So the stage and the moment we know won't be too big for him, which we didn't know with Case Keenum, and obviously a little bit of it was. And Case started off well, and he had a couple of nice comebacks, and then it kind of fizzled out after that.
It did. It certainly fizzled out, along with the book sales, I'm sure.
Oh, how do you think, can we check the book sales? How'd that book sell?
They are
how did
handing
it sell
them
overall?
Out at the airport.
Oh, they really?
Yeah.
95% off.
95% off. That's right. I like Case Keenum. I'm still going to root for
$2.99.
Case
Keenum.
I'm still going to root for Case Keenum.
Was that the downfall there?
I told you. Who was the most optimistic about Case Keenum on this radio station?
Going Zach Bye.
And I was the most critical about that damn book when I found out it was going to be released on the week one of the NFL schedule. I said they're literally releasing the book within the same 72-hour period that the Broncos played their first game, and I hated it.
Did you hate the timing, or do you hate that he did the book?
I hate the timing more. I don't like the mission complete sort of feeling of the book. Like, Nick Foles wrote a book, too. Nick Foles went and won a Super Bowl with Super Bowl MVP.
Right.
Like, Case Keenum was a full-time starter for a year and had a really nice season. But it seemed like, and D-Mac did such a hilarious job of detailing the, you know, credits rolling. Like, the movie's over. Like, you wrote the book, it's over.
Right.
And I just didn't like it. I never liked it. And that was in the midst of me being optimistic about the guy.
It turned out you were spot on about that book. I didn't mind it. Look, you strike when the iron's hot, and you know obviously he's looking to parlay what they call that play against the Saints.
I mean, the Minnesota Miracle.
Yeah, you know that was the kind of the pinnacle there to probably of everything that you know the attention that he was going to get from that and the lead up to the book deal. So it's like if he didn't do it then. That's probably going to be the only time he'd ever have an opportunity to write a book.
Sure.
Right? And
sure,
so
sure.
I don't blame him for doing it if he wanted to do that type of thing. But at the same time, it turned out to be a big, you know, wah-wah-wah.
Yeah. Yeah. That being said, he's in a quarterback competition there in Washington. We'll see what happens. Maybe we'll see.
Did you see Joe Madden?
Yes.
What he said?
Yes. I thought it was pretty good.
You know, after the game, they're asking about, you know, the Nolan, hitting Nolan, right? And he goes, he's talking about his players. We get hit a lot. Rizzo gets hit a lot. Chris Bryant gets hit a lot. I've always said you got two options. Go to the mound or go to first base. Don't sit there and jabber. Make up your mind. Do one or the other. I love that.
That is a great quote.
I love it.
Go to the mound or go to first.
No need to just keep chirping and talking and yelling at the pitcher and back and forth. Just get it out of the way. Which one are you going to do?
I love that. I love that. That's old school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to his point, the day that Nolan got hit, okay, but the game before, Chris Bryant did get plunked twice.
Right.
So
it's going to be retaliation. Yeah, and Nolan said it. He said he kind of expected it.
And he should have. That's the way that game works. And people will roll their eyes and hate this stuff. There's a part of me that loves that frontier justice.
Right.
That it's going to even itself out. Commission, you can just hang out there. We're going to handle this.
Yes.
And I love, and people will come at me and roll their eyes and tell me I'm an idiot and tell me I'm living in the Stone Age. I still love that you can throw your bare knuckles in hockey. Because there's a tendency in that sport for everyone to sort of walk the same line, because they know if they don't, it will catch up to them in a hurry. And so I love fighting in hockey. I hope they never take it out. And I know, again, a lot of folks will say that's an archaic take in right. 2019. I still love it. I'm always going to love it.
Yeah, I think, you know, baseball kind of polices itself, and I like that about baseball. It's one of those things that, you know, hey, tempers start flaring. You hit one of their guys. Uh-oh, you better be ready. Your guy's going to get hit. And so I do like that about baseball. And I like what Joe Maddon said. Look, hey, no need to talk about it. Either just go to first or go to the mound. I like that. That was good stuff. But, you know, Nolan obviously got hit on the forearm, was sore, was in for an inning, then came out of the game. You know, he said that he felt okay and he thought he was going to play today, but he wasn't quite sure. So we'll see. You know, what his availability is going to be for today. Going up against the Padres?
Yep. You're going up against the Padres. There's a.
It's 6:40.
It's a four game stint.
And got John Gray on the mound?
John Gray on the mound. This is the stretch. Guys, focus in here. This is the stretch that we've been talking about for 3 weeks now. We've been looking ahead to Thursday, June 13th. Why is that important? Because you got four games against the Padres. Three games against the D-backs, three games against the Dodgers, three games against the Giants, four games against the Dodgers, a quick two little mini series with the Astros, and then you finish up this half of the season with three games against the Diamondbacks. That is all in division, minus the two games against the Astros. This could really, I don't want to say make or break, but as damn close as you can get in the month of June and July, this is that.
It is. It's a big stretch for them. A lot of in-division games right there. I mean, that's what it's all about. So if you want to, you know, try to get back in the West pitcher, which I think we all think is probably not going to happen, this is the time to do it. And if you don't do it now, you're not going to get back in the West and catch the Dodgers. Certainly you can still be a wild card team, but a very, very important stretch here coming up for the Rockies.
We got the drive coming up next.